जय गोपीजनवल्लभ गिरिवरधारी यशोदनन्दन व्रजजनरञ्जन यशोदनन्दन व्रजजनरञ्जन यमुनातीरवनचारि यमुनातीरवनचारि जय राधा माधव कुञ्ज बिहारि जय गोपीजनवल्लभ गिरिवरधारि यशोदानन्दन व्रजजनरञ्जन यशोदानन्दन व्रजजनरञ्जन यमुनातीरवनचारि यमुनातीरवनचारि जय राधा माधव कुञ्ज बिहारि जय प्रभुपद जय प्रभुपद जय प्रभुपद शील प्रभुपद प्रभुपाद 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 जय जय प्रभुपाद जय विश्वपाद परमहंस पवित्र अस्तुतर सश्रीमद ए सी भक्तिवान स्वामी श्री प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की नवचर श्री हरिदास ठाकुर की प्रेम से कव श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री द्वैत गदाधर श्रीवास आदि गौर भक्तवृंद की श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंड गिरी गोवर्धन की नितय गौर प्रेमानंद ऑलवेज असेंबल डिवोटीज ऑलवेज असेंबल डिवोटीज ऑलवेज असेंबल डिवोटीज ऑलवेज ऑलवेज श्री श्री गुरु एंड श्री गौरंगा ऑलवेज श्री प्रभुपाद ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यास ततो जयमुदीरये नष्टाप्रयेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवत्युत्तमा श्लोके भक्ते भवति नैष्टिकी सो रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कांटो 3 चैप्टर 25 वी डूइंग वर्स नंबर 14 तम इमं ते प्रवक्ष्यामि यम अवोचम पुराणगे ऋषिनां श्रोतु कामाना योगं सर्वांग नैपुणा
तमिमं ते प्रवक्ष्यामि यमवोचं पुराणगे ऋषीणां श्रुतिकामानां योगं सर्वाङ्गनैपुणां तमिमं ते प्रवक्ष्यामि यमवोचं पुराणगे ऋषीणां श्रुतिकामानां योगं सर्वाङ्गनैपुणम्.
प्लीज चैंट.
तमिमं ते प्रवक्ष्यामि यमवोचं पुराणगे ऋषीणां श्रुतिकामानां योगं सर्वाङ्गनैपुणम्.
Anyone else? Ladies? You're trying.
तमिमं ते प्रवक्ष्यामि यमवोचं पुराणगे ऋषीणां श्रुतिकामानां योगं सर्वाङ्गनैपुणम्. तमिमं,
that very,
ते,
to you,
pravakshyami,
I shall explain,
yam,
which,
avocham,
I explained,
pura,
formerly,
anage,
O pious mother,
rishinam,
to the sages,
shrotukamanam,
eager to hear,
yogam,
yoga system,
yoga.
Sarva anga,
in all respects,
nepunam,
serviceable and
practical. Translation, O most pious mother, I shall now explain unto you the ancient yoga system which I explained formerly to the great sages. It is serviceable and practical in every way. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The Lord does not manufacture a new system of yoga. Sometimes it is claimed that someone has become an incarnation of God and is expounding a new theological aspect of the absolute truth. But here we find that although Kapila Muni is the Lord himself and is capable of manufacturing a new doctrine for his mother, he nevertheless says, I shall just explain the ancient system which I once explained to the great sages, because they were also anxious to hear about it. When we have a super excellent process already present in Vedic scriptures, there is no need to concoct a new system to mislead the innocent public. At present, it has become a fashion to reject the standard system and present something bogus in the name of a newly invented process of yoga. Om Gyanindamrindasya Giranjana Shlaka Chakshurunandana Tasmai Shri Nabhirave Namaha. So yeah, this verse, I mean this whole episode in the Bhagavatam just gives a really good example of what the spiritual master is like and what a good listener or a good disciple is like. What was the one thing that the Purport Prabhupada points out about the disciple or the listener? One quality that was there that the listener has. Actually, Kapila Dev said it, you know. Prabhupada quotes him. There's one thing that Prabhupada pointed out. What was the quality? Anyone remember? Yeah, stand up. Oh, sorry. Yes, sir. Question. In the Purport, Prabhupada points out one quality, one aspect of the listener or the disciple that, you know, makes the speaker or the guru speak. Yeah, there's that. Was that Prabhupada?
Interest.
Prabhupada just pointed out because they were also anxious to hear about it. That anxiety, it just really stood out to me, that this word, they were actually anxious. So in this world, the whole, as we know, the whole creation is there so that the jiva, You know, who here has never had anxiety or is anxious? People are anxious for breakfast. When will this class end? There's always anxiety for something, right? And so when the jiva really gets anxious and it's like, what is the point of all of this? That's when Krishna is like, all right, this person is ready. Let me come, or let me send my messenger in some shape or form. And Krishna always sends. Krishna always comes. There's never a point in time when a soul is anxious and really calls out to Krishna and to, you know, to God, or just calls out for help and Krishna does not respond. There's so many examples of that in Srimad Bhagavatam. We were attending a japa retreat by Mahatma Prabhu, and he was saying that the solution for mechanical japa is heartfelt prayer. When we do our japa with heartfelt prayers, and I was reflecting that, yeah, there's so many anxieties in this world. Of course, it's actually not that hard to do heartfelt japa. Of course, Krishna is, as Prabhupada pointed out, that Krishna is not our order carrier. We don't just go to Krishna with all our problems for solutions. But when a soul really calls out, with anxiety, actually there's a devotee. He was in Vrindavan. He was giving this example about japa and the neediness. So he was in Vrindavan. And there was, in Vrindavan, all these little kids come and then they bug you for whatever they bug you for candy or money or something. And this devotee was like, just, leave me alone, just leave me alone. And the kid was just, kept pestering. And then finally the kid left. And then this devotee saw from far this Brajavasi kid pushing, her other sibling, or maybe it was a parent who was disabled, and just kind of pushing the other person, this disabled person of his, and pushing away, going around the corner. And then this devotee was so touched, and he was like, oh my God, I should have given him something, He's really neat. He's actually really a needy person. And he was reflecting that on japa, that, yeah, we should really show our need to Krishna. Like, we are really needy. Normally, sometimes it's a bad thing to be really needy, but with Krishna, it's all right. We should show our anxiety. We should show our neediness. Like, Krishna, I really, really need you. So that's the quality of a disciple or a person who's, wants to hear the absolute truth. They have anxiety. Things don't make sense to them. So with that anxiety, we can go to Krishna. And we see that when we are taking up Krishna consciousness, and one of the top group of people is people who are just anxious, right? People who are in anxiety or distressed. Right? Krishna says in the Gita, one of the four people, one is distressed. And most people are somehow or the other, for some reason or other are distressed, for some reason. And others, come for wealth or comfort more so. Then, you need something, so you take up Krishna consciousness, and that's also there. And then there's the inquisitive, and then there's the inquisitive, and then there's the one who's searching for knowledge. So there's the four kind of people. But distress is normally there. So yeah, that's the one main quality. So here, Devahuti as well, she's eager. She's eager to hear, and this whole pastime with her marrying Kardama Muni, everything has led for her to hear the sole purpose was that Kapila Dev speaks to Devahuti. And so she's very eager that he speaks and he gives her this knowledge and devotional service. And so that's the quality of the listener or the disciple. And the quality of the speaker or the guru, as shown in this verse, is that they're authentic. They don't just come up with stuff. They speak either from previous acharyas, or they speak the truth that is self-evident. They speak of the systems that have already been established by God himself. Of course, Kapila Muni is himself a supreme personality, he got it. But, the spiritual master establishes principles that have already been shown by God himself. All our acharyas and our lines they speak on principles that have spoken by Lord Chaitanya or from the Srimad Bhagavatam and so forth. So that's the other thing. A genuine guru is not a cheater. A genuine teacher is not a cheater. That's the principle that we follow. And they're not out there to get the disciples' money. They're not out there to get their disciples' attention. They're not out there to get their disciples, you know, whatever it is that a person can give. And we see this world is full of cheaters. Yeah, I was thinking of Radhanath Maharaj's book the other day, and initially when he was searching for the truth, he was anxious for the truth. You know, he was traveling. He traveled all over the world. And one of the teachers that he had met, you know, he was having affairs with his female disciples, you know, some other tradition somewhere. And everybody was just so shocked. And that's the integrity of a guru, that they don't cheat. You know, they're genuine. And if they don't know the answer, they will say it. I don't know. I have to do research. I have to ask others. I have to so forth. You know, there's no harm in it. You know, sometimes that happens. But it's that is more genuine than saying, oh, I know everything. And let me just tell you something. And, you know, and especially these days, yeah, the gurus or teachers in society, in Kali Yuga, they're just word jugglers. They just come up with stuff. At one point, I was asked by a good friend of mine, Hari Kirtan Prabhu. He's a yoga teacher in D.C., and he also has written a few books on the Bhagavad Gita. And one of his purposes was to defeat some impersonalist philosophers, teachers in the yoga scene in, you know, at that time. And he had asked me, he wanted to go to this 1 3-day seminar by this impersonalist teacher on the Gita, but he couldn't go. So he said, Shruti, could you go and take notes for an entire weekend from this, listen to this seminar, get me all his points and I'll defeat it in my book. I said, sure, bro, I'll do it as a service. That was the longest and the most miserable weekend I ever had. But at least I was doing it as service. So I went there to this teacher, and he knew I was a Hare Krishna. He could tell. He knew Hare Kirtan. And he was speaking philosophy from the Gita. And practically everything he was saying it, and then he was contradicting it, like in the next few hours or the next day, and because I was taking notes. So I was like, you said this on day one, but you're saying this on day two. So, you know, if you know, a genuine guru does not do that. You know, they really speak authentically. It makes sense. They don't just contradict themselves. They don't contradict the principles that they're speaking about. Sure, sometimes some things Acharya says, they're a bit contradictory, but they're normally pertaining to details. They don't pertain to principles. So that's the nature, you know, we're seeing this verse, that's the nature of a spiritual master. So yeah, the spiritual master knows how to keep the principles intact, you know. For every time, place, and circumstance, the spiritual master presents everything in such a way that it always stays aligned. You know, we have these spiritual masters and incarnations who have come from time and again. There's so many avatars, you know. I was thinking of that. There was Hamsa avatar who came and spoke all this philosophy in the 11th canto, I believe. And there's all these different avatars and different teachers. There's Narada Muni and there's Vyasadeva. But every single thing that they say is in sync. There is no real, like, huge contradiction, you know. So that's the nature of a genuine acharya. They repeat like a parrot in that sense, you know. Not that they don't have a brain of themselves, not that they can't be creative, but they repeat the message, and it's the same exact thing. So that's one thing we want to bear in mind. We don't want to come up with something, so-called creative, just to be for the sake of creativity. And so the guru keeps everything in line. All the message stays the same. So that's one thing that, yeah, it always stays the same. And another thing is that, you know, as you can see, that there are truths in this world, you know. In the Bhagavatam, of course, the Bhagavatam is all about the absolute truth. But also in general, there are truths that people can actually notice in the world that you don't really have to look at a book of religion, right? There are many principles, like even basic stuff that I was thinking of different principles. One was I was thinking that in general, people understand, like the Bhagavatam says, you should have good association, satam prasangat, mama virya samvido, that one should have good association of devotees to really grow in Krishna consciousness. But that principle, if anybody is, you know, has some common sense, then they can see that, yeah, you know, your association is who you are, whatever kind of association you keep. So all these truths are always there in this world. So anyone who is honest can see that, yeah, these principles are always there. And what are some other examples? One was I was thinking about association, yeah, that people understand. People also understand that there is death, that things change, you know. Even an average person sees that this principle is there. Excuse me, that change is the only constant. Our body changes, you know, circumstance change, governments change, civilizations change. So people understand that. They might not like it, but that principle exists. And for most people, they can see that. And of course, the Bhagavatam also, the Bhagavad Gita also talks about change. They talk about it. And the other thing, the other principle, which I was reflecting that also people normally notice is you get what you put out there. You put a certain amount of effort, you get normally that, you know, that kind of return. And even you don't even have to be a religious person to believe that, you know. That's just the principle that people see. What's the principle in physics by Newton? Every action has a equal and opposite reaction, you know. So that also. So these principles are out there, and they're just truths that are out there. And so, yeah, same going back to the guru. The guru always, whatever they speak, you know, it's evident. You know, it's self-evident many times. You know, you can see that. Like, yeah, it's true. And so many of these texts, these, you know, yeah, Krishna comes in so many shapes and forms and teachers, and they speak in so many, you know, in different cultures, they speak in different languages. But if one is a deep seeker, if one actually is a deep devotee, then they can see that these truths are embedded everywhere. They're embedded in daily life. They are embedded in nature. They're embedded in the different teachings by different teachers and different cultures and religions and so forth. And of course, they're in the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita. And the Bhagavatam is the cream of all these scriptures. The Bhagavatam and the, you know, it's everything is in there. And everything is there in such a deep way. It's not a shallow religion. But these truths are there. They're out there. As another thing I was reflecting on was that this one principle that, you know, the trees, they come from seeds. And everything has a cause. You know, we come from another human and so forth. There's nothing that just kind of just comes up on its own. And if anybody just pays attention to it, then they will see that, yeah, everything has a cause. It's just the reality, the principle of it, you know. There's nothing that just shows up. And so, you know, of course, those who are theistic, they take that and they think that, well, then there should be a divine creator. There should be some intelligence behind this world. But at least, even if one is an atheist or whatever, they can see this principle that everything comes from something. You know, that basic principle can be noticed by an honest person out there. And of course, you know, if one is a religious person, then they'll think, yeah, everything comes from God. Yeah, everything comes from something except God. You know, Krishna is the cause of all causes. So yeah, there's all these truths out there, and one just simply has to be genuine. One simply has to be genuine. And Prabhupada talks about that often, that one simply has to be honest. And they will see, they will become God realized, actually, over time, in this life or the next, if they're genuine, if they're sincere, if they're seeking something that's true. If one simply wants to cheat others and cheat themselves, then there's no hope, really, you know. Then hopefully, sooner or later, they'll meet a devotee, and the devotee will give them some books and prasadam, and they'll come to their senses. But yeah, if one is stubborn, if the jiva is simply stubborn that I want to enjoy in this world, you know, through my material senses, then there is no hope. And Bhagavad Gita also says that there's that word Bhogeshwarya starts with, I don't remember the entire verse. But yeah, you know, Krishna says if one is hell-bent on just enjoying through the material senses, you know, then they cannot really advance in Krishna consciousness. And it's often this verse, this point often comes in verses in the Bhagavatam also. And so, but if somebody has some open-mindedness, then they'll realize that, yeah, there's more to life than just, you know, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So yeah, these principles, you know, Kapila Dev is talking about the ancient yoga system. So these truths are always there. They can be seen by a common man, even if they're just open-minded. And then what to speak of Actually, I want to ask, are there any other principles that people see in nature? What do you all think? Is there anything out there that you notice that are just true, that you don't need a scripture to even tell, you know? What are some other things? Can you think of something? Can you think of something, Fani Bhushan Prabhu? Some truths that are just out there? So wait. As sure as death. Yeah, death is certain, right? Yeah, it's there. That is there. It's the rising and setting of the sun. Yep, yeah. It is for sure it will happen every single day. Yeah. What else? What were you saying, Prabhu? So practically every instruction is out there?
Krishna gives a lot of practical instructions. So if you eat too much or eat too little, that's a reaction.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So if you, that's a principle.
Yeah.
You can adhere to it. If you don't adhere to it, you pay the price.
Yeah, if you eat too much, eat too little. Yeah, Krishna says that, and of course.
All of instructions run this parallel that if you follow, your life will be a little easier. And if you don't follow, life will be rough.
Yeah, yeah.
So take the smooth path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you eat too little. Yeah, these principles are out there, and people understand it. You know, it's just common sense. And the point is that these books on religion, sometimes people think, oh, it's just dogma. It's like, no, it's not dogma. These principles that are in the Bhagavatam and in Bhagavad Gita, these are just truths, you know. It's not just some religion you have to follow as dogma. These are truths, and people can actually experience it. And yeah, people often come and we tell them, like, yeah, chant Hare Krishna. And they experience something, you know. It's not just like, oh, you must do this because that's what God says and that's it. And no, it's like you can chant Hare Krishna. You can have a genuine religious, spiritual experience. And based on that, people can decide, you know, on themselves that if they want to be a Hare Krishna or not, or if they want to do this practice or not. So yeah, these books, the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, they have principles that are just, that are true. They're just true by nature. And you know, the three modes of material nature, right? That's also true. It's obvious. When you do activities in the mode of ignorance, how many of you know somebody who criticizes all day and night and is very happy? Anyone know somebody? You know, someone just criticizes left and right, complains all day and night, and is just genuinely happy. Oh, this sucks. Ah, great. There's nobody out there like that. And you know, we don't need the Bhagavad Gita to tell us that. Of course, it's there. But yeah, just common sense. These are principles. This is how the laws of nature are. This is how the material nature is, you know. This is how it works. And more the material nature, right? So yeah, more the passion is there. And then, of course, you have mode of passion when somebody is really, really focused on the fruits, you know, then there's certain results. They might get the fruits, but they will also have certain kinds of suffering. And one understands that. When one focuses a lot on work, you know, just making money, then there's loss on other ends in life, you know. Again, these are just principles that are out there, you know. And mode of goodness, of course, we all understand, you know, and that's just a principle that's out there. You do something regularly, you do it in moderation, you do exercise, you do whatever other activity, then the result will be, you know, happiness, it will be longevity. You know, these results will come from activities or lifestyle and mode of goodness. And these are not, you know, dogma or religion, it's just principles that work. And people see that all the time. And what else? Anything else that comes to mind? Any principles that are in the Gita, but also people can just, you know, see it themselves by activity, by daily life. Yeah, the modes of material nature is a prominent one. But yeah, any other thoughts before we move on? Was that true? Yeah, the body is changing, yeah. Yeah, youth, old age, disease, yeah. Youth to old age to death, yeah. That's just principle, it just happens, that's what it is. And you see that. And also on that, another principle that people notice is that nobody wants that, you know. Nobody wants to die, really. I mean, how many people really want to die? And there's research. People do research on longevity and this and that. And so that principle, everybody notices this, is aware of it. And that's the same thing in the, you know, we understand that the soul never dies. You know, that's the nature of the soul is to be eternal. So that's the principle, and we see it in daily life with to people's desire to not die. And, you know, so that's what we see out, you know, just through common sense. But, yeah, the Bhagavad Gita explains that the soul is eternal. And what else? Anything else before we move on? Yeah. But, yeah, in other religions also, there are principles. There are truths that are everywhere, you know. And somebody, again, who is somebody who is genuine in their God consciousness. You know, Prabhupada said that. Prabhupada said that anyone, any religion that helps us move towards loving God is a genuine religion, you know, it's bona fide. You know. Yes, bro?
A certain amount of happiness is
a
continuum
between
the
change
of discipline.
Yeah.
There's no fear of anything.
Yeah. A certain amount of distress comes along with happiness. Yeah, it's always there. The duality of this world, yeah, right? Yeah, the ebbs and flow of life. Another, you know, another principle that people understand, and we understand from the Gita and the Bhagavatam, that, you know, everything ebbs and flows. And yeah, there's no pain, no gain. It's a common slogan in the world out there. You know, you gotta, you know, have some pain if you wanna gain something. So we understand these principles, and it's just, yeah, it's, again, it's common sense. And it's amazing, though, that even though it's just people have been so traumatized by how religion has spread, you know, people are so traumatized by fanatic religions, that they're not able to sometimes, they're just so averse to any kind of religion. And when they come across the Gita or the Bhagavatam, and, you know, they can be a bit averse, but if they calm down, come out of their PTSD from other religion, of the experiences of how religion is forced on people, then they will see that, no, these books simply talk of the truths and the principles that are also noticeable to some extent, you know. And so, yeah, that's the nature of the Acharya. The Acharya only speaks the truth, only speaks of these principles. And because the Acharya has firm faith in it, has firm faith and also has experience and has, you know, has experience in it, then it touches people's hearts. The, you know, that's what really touches people's hearts. When somebody is truthful, that's what really touches people's hearts. And so what to speak of when someone is speaking from the absolute truth, then then the spirit soul can feel it. You know, beyond the brain, the logic, the intelligence, the spirit soul can actually feel it when they hear Krishna's name on a Harinam, when they hear that the soul is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss, they can feel it. And that's what, you know, that's what really works in terms of outreach. Yes, bro.
Senses can never be satiated.
Yeah. 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 Do you think people get that? Do you think people understand that as a principle? Yeah? Could you talk? Yeah. But they always try to keep satisfy their senses. So how would you say that they understand that principle, that the senses can never be satisfied? Good luck with trying. Yeah. Yeah. I guess to some degree or other, they have that understanding. Yeah. 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 And yeah. And also, like, there's a general understanding out there that we try, over-satiate our senses, then normally it leads to disease or so forth, you know. So, yeah, that also people, if they are a little bit more in the mode of goodness, yeah, they will understand it, that, yeah, the senses can never be satisfied, yeah. But these truths are always there in different shapes and forms. And also I was thinking about how there are truths that are in our religion, of course, in the Bhagavatam and the Gita and so forth, but also the same principles are in other religions also, you know, at least some of them, if not all. And just the basic idea of karma, even, you know. In Christianity, they have, as you sow, so shall you reap. I believe that's in the Bible. And Quran also. I had to do some research, and since I don't know these other scriptures, I'll have to refer to notes now. But yeah, there are some principles out there also in other religions. Let's see. And I felt it would be good to quote them, actually. Oh yeah, so for karma, of course, we understand there's the principle of karma. In the Bible, it says, whatever one sows, that he will reap. Quran says, whoever does an atom's weight of gold or evil will see it. So basically, yeah, whatever you do, you'll see the results, right? Death is there, of course. We understand there's death. In the Bible, it is appointed unto men once to die. The Quran says, every soul will taste death. It's the materialism. So, of course, we understand, yeah, the desire is never, as probably pointed out, desire is not pacified by enjoyment. And in the Bible, it says, he that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver. The Quran says, competition for worldly increase distracts you until you visit the graveyards. What else? Let's see. Pride. Bible has pride goeth before destruction. And Quran says, God does not like the arrogant. So, yeah, my point being that, yeah, these principles that are in the Bhagavatam are also in these other religions. And because the point is that truth is always there. You know, truth is always out there. It's there in amongst common folk and people of common sense, but also in some, you know, in some other major religions, these truths are out there. Yeah, material life is temporary, right? So that's there, definitely there a lot in the Bhagavatam and the Gita. And the Bible, it says, earthly treasures decay. Seek treasure in heaven. The Quran says, every soul will taste death. Worldly life is an enjoyment of delusion. So yeah, these principles, they are there. And every bona fide teacher, every bona fide religion will have these principles. That's the test of any bona fide religion, that these principles will be there in some shape or form or the other. And of course, we understand, you know, different religions are there based on time, place, circumstance, for different audiences and so forth. So it's spoken in different shapes and forms. And the Bhagavatam is just, the Bhagavatam is elite, and not in an elitist sense, but it's just like, as I said, it's the cream of the cream. It has all the truths in the best possible manner. And that's why we love the Srimad Bhagavatam, right? Yeah. You love the Srimad Bhagavatam because it has the cream. You know, who doesn't like ice cream? Srimad Bhagavatam is the ice cream of all religions. So yeah, Srimad Bhagavatam has all these truths with such genuineness, such sincerity, with such depth, that a genuine seeker, a genuine person who is anxious to really know what is the purpose of life, the Bhagavatam will come to them somehow or the other. You know, in some shape or some way, the Srimad Bhagavatam will come to them if someone is genuinely seeking or anxious to know the truth. Krishna will come to them. You know, there's so many stories of people. I remember Vaisheshika Prabhu tells that his story, right? He was praying in his room. He was praying, like, God, I really want to find you. Something to that. He was seeking. And then he hears a knock on his bedroom, and it's his friend. His school, he was in high school still, so his high school friend knocks, and he's like, I got this magazine, and I thought you would really like it. And it was Back to God at magazine. And he was like, he's just praying in his room, and this Krishna just slid under the door, came to him. And there's so many stories like that. So yeah, all it takes is some anxiety, anxious to hear about the ancient yoga system, and Krishna comes one way or the other. And so that's the quality of the guru. Yeah, the guru is self-evident, you know, one who is in touch with the truth, one who's in touch with the process of bhakti yoga. That's what the science of Krishna. Lord Chaitanya said that, right? One who knows the science of Krishna, he's a guru. And so anyone who knows that science, they're in touch with it. And Krishna speaks through that person. And as devotees, yeah, we are all gurus in that sense. We're in touch with Krishna, and Krishna speaks through us. And we can touch so many lives that way. But yeah, anyone who's anxious, anyone who's sincere, they can, you know, truth can come to them in any shape and form. And in the Bhagavatam, we see, which canto is it? Is it the 11th canto where there is the Avadhuta talks about the many gurus that are out there. You know, there's so many gurus in nature, in other persons. I was recently reading about Pingala, the prostitute. Yeah, Pingala, she was, it's an interesting story actually, because Pingala was this prostitute. And in that one night, she basically shows the entire journey of a jiva that's lost in this material realm. You know, she's a prostitute, and she was in her home, and that one night she was waiting and looking for clients, basically. And she was waiting, and she was thinking, oh, maybe this person. She was looking outside. She was standing on her doorway, and she was looking outside, and she was thinking, oh, maybe this person will come. You know, maybe this person will come, but nobody was coming. And then she went off on the street, thinking, oh, maybe this man will come. This man will come. And so for us also. We are never satiated. We think like maybe this will give us happiness. Maybe that will give us happiness. Maybe this is it, you know. And then we keep searching after something after another. So she was waiting for all of it, and then it just wasn't coming. No one wanted to come that night to her place. And then she was there, and all of a sudden this realization started coming to her, like, yeah, this, you know, this does not work. Trying to satisfy our senses does not work. And she suddenly had detachment. And so that's the cycle of the jiva as well. You know, we realize that there is something higher, and then some detachment comes, and we start seeking the absolute truth. And so when she was detached, and then she, you know, then she actually found real happiness in God consciousness. And it's described, and then, you know, then she was pacified, she just went to sleep. And so, yes, so for the Avaduta, Pingla was like a guru. But yeah, so that's the thing. A genuine person can see that a guru can come in any shape and form. You know, even a person like Pingla, you know, he could see that this prostitute had this great realization. So we see that, you know, someone who's genuine can see a guru in any shape and form. Yeah, the world is full of gurus. we can get lessons from Krishna from anything, even from an ant, from an insect. We can get any lesson. Yeah. From any animal, any human being, and so forth. And so one simply has to be genuine. And that's the whole theme of this episode with Kapiladev and Devahuti. There is this genuine person, Devahuti, just eager to hear from her own son, Kapila Muni. And here he's speaking the absolute truth. All right, I think that's all, most of my... Oh, actually, there was another... big point I forgot about. So, you know, we talked about the truth, right? How the guru doesn't change anything. But what is the thin line between innovation and changing principles, you know? You know, there is this aspect, right? The guru is genuine, speaks the truth, and doesn't, you know, change the principles, right? But then there's the other side where the spiritual master always innovates. And in our tradition, we see that the spiritual masters, acharyas, have taken great risks and have innovated and done innovative things. Some of them were criticized at those times. And so that's just a fine balance that, you know, to keep the principles intact, but still innovate at the same time, or change course, you know. And we see that over time and over again. When Lord Chaitanya came, starting with Lord Chaitanya, you know, Sankirtan or Kirtan was there. You know, they were doing Kirtan in Srivasangam, right? You know, it was going on, chanting of God's names was there. But what he did was so revolutionary was that he took it out on the streets, shared it with everybody, you know. And even, yeah, we read about Lord Chaitanya in our school books, in our history books, actually, as a bhakti social reformer. So even those who are not religious took note of it, that, yeah, here's this great personality, the saint, who said, do hell to caste, do hell to what birth one has, do hell to all of that, you know, do hell to these temples where the priests only hoard God's names. We'll take God's names on the streets and share it with everybody, and anyone and everybody. And so Lord Chaitanya did that. You know, he took God's names out there without any discrimination. So that was his revolution, the Sankirtan revolution. He took out the God's name out on the streets, and now, of course, he had to face backlash. And many people just saw him as a sentimentalist. They thought, who is this? And we see that in the CC, right? Who is that sannyasi's name in Varanasi? Was it? Was it Prakashananda Saraswati? Was it Prabodhananda or Prakashananda? I always confuse them. Prakashananda, right? Okay, thanks for Prakashananda Saraswati. He was this impersonalist Mayavadi sannyasi in Varanasi, and And he was complaining. He was like, who is this, you know, Krishna Chaitanya? You know, who is this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? You know, he's just like a madman. He's this sentimentalist chanting. He should be studying, you know, speaking Vedanta. He should be studying that and speaking that. You know, that's what he should be doing. And so there were people were complaining about him, you know. But, you know, but Lord Chaitanya was, of course, he's the Supreme Personality, he got it. And as a great acharya, he established Sankirtan as the Yuga Dharma for this age. You know, he didn't just do it, but that was another thing. He established as the Yuga Dharma, like, this is the way. You know, this is the way to go back to Godhead. So, Lord Chaitanya, of course, then there was Haridas Thakur, you know, the Vaishnava acharyas at the time, Advaita Acharya. He had Haridas Thakur come at his father's Shraddh, Shraddh ceremony, and he had Haridas Thakur be the chief guest, you know, whatever, like the chief person do it, even though there were so many brahmanas. And if one really thinks about it, you know, Advaita Acharya was the greatest teacher, one of the greatest teachers at that time, and a really, really highly revered brahmana. But he had Haridas Thakur, who was born from, you know, from a non-Vedic family, a Muslim family, who had become a devotee. You know, he had him be the chief person at his father's Shraddh. And all these brahmanas were there, you know, some were really upset, like, what is going on? You know, you can't do that. And even in today's age, you know, I grew up in India, if somebody does something like that, you know, I'll be like, whoa, that's just odd. You know, from the societal standards, you know, one would think that's odd. But the principle was there. No, here's a great devotee. Here's a great devotee of Krishna who chants names of Krishna incessantly. So that's the higher principle. And our acharyas, Advaita Acharya, was not afraid to apply that principle. You know, he was not afraid of that. So we see that, yeah, there can be so many, you know, there's so many books. There's so many scriptures. There's so many injunctions. There's so many traditions, norms, and so forth. But as acharyas, you know, as gurus, as teachers, one has to realize that what are the right principles to apply in what shape and form. And of course, we see in more recent times, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta, you know, they established Gaudiya Math. There was no organized religion before that. In the 1800s, you know, when Christianity started coming in more with the British, and there were these organized missionaries, these Christian missionaries, who were basically, you know, saying that all this Vedic religion is just nonsense. And they were really attacking Vedic culture and religion. There's a famous quote by, I don't remember the guy, the British guy, but he was in charge of establishing education in India, Macaulay or something. And he had said that if you really want to get to the Indians, you have to start with educating them in the Western way. Because the Indians were getting educated more traditionally. They would learn Shastra. They would, you know, they said, no, you got to get them away from that. You know, so they knew that, you know, that Indians can be subdued by if you educate them in the British ways, by education. And so, yeah, so the Indians also were following the British, and they thought, like, there were many organized religions that started coming up in the 1800s. And so with Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta, they also did that. They saw that this is the way to go forward. We have had this Gaudiya Vaishnavism for a few centuries or more, but it needs to be really, you know, institutionalized in some, you know, to some extent. And they did that. Of course, Bhaktisiddhanta, there's an essay where he said it's a necessary evil. Institutions can be, they are necessary, but, you know, they can be a pain sometimes. And our acharyas, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta saw that, but he saw that it was the need of the hour. So he innovated, and he made it an institution. And to that end, at that time, there were no saffron sannyasis. By that time, there were no sannyasis in the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition. There were just babajis. You know, babajis were renunciates. And so that was the norm, that was the tradition. And when Bhaktisiddhanta reinstituted that, the sannyas, you know, the saffron sannyas, he was criticized for it. He was criticized for it by his own brother. Lalit Prasad actually criticized him. And he said that this is not the norm, you know, this institutionalization and being Goshtyanandis. You know, Goshtyanandis are those who go out and preach. And that's why Bhaktisiddhanta wanted to create Goshtyanandis. He wanted, in the shape of these sannyasis who aren't just renunciates, but go out and buy properties, preach, deal with other people, you know, do all the stuff Prabhupada did, right? You know, Prabhupada did all kinds of stuff, you know. He printed books, preaching to the choir here, but, you know, he just came on a ship. That was another thing. Crossing the ocean meant you lose your caste, you know. And, of course, Indians were doing it in 1800s, 1900s, you know, Mahatma Gandhi came. That was an issue for him also, actually, it's in biography. But specifically for a sannyasi to come, that's even a bigger deal, you know, to lose your caste. And back then it was a big deal. And so, but Bhaktisiddhanta sent his disciples to the UK, into London. And so he rode in a car. his jacket or suit, not suit, but you know, he wore some kind of clothing that was just like, sannyasis don't do that, but he innovated. So yeah, there are things that are principles that need to stay intact, but then there's also the need of the hours is innovation. And every acharya has innovated some shape or form. Prabhupada did even more, before I forget, Bhaktisiddhanta, another revolutionary thing was that he gave the Brahmin thread to men who were not born in Brahmin families, and that was extremely revolutionary. So for generations, you know, the acharyas gave Vaishnava diksha, like, okay, you know, you get diksha, you're Vaishnava, right? But then finally Bhaktisiddhanta was like, well, they're Vaishnavas, they're higher than Brahmins, so why shouldn't they get the sacred thread? So he did that, and because of that, his life was threatened. You know, some cops came to him one day and they said, you know, just so you know, like, they want to kill you for that. So he wasn't, you know, he was a lion guru, he was bold. And of course, Prabhupada, when he came, you know, he gave Brahmin Diksha to women. You know, he saw that in the West, you know, men and women are treated equally. So, and his female disciples, I don't remember the specific names, they were like, well, our God brothers are getting Brahmin, we should also, you know. And so Prabhupada was like, all right, yeah, you also get Brahmin Diksha. So acharyas, they can do these big innovations, you know. And of course, Prabhupada was criticized for having men's and women's ashram, the, you know, commingling of men and women, other criticisms that Prabhupada had to face. But yeah, these acharyas, they, you know, we really have to learn how to keep the absolute truth intact while really changing for the time, place, and circumstance. And sometimes it means big changes. You know, sometimes it does mean that, as we can see in our history. That's our history. We have to innovate as time goes on. And even I was reflecting on the Bhagavatam and Prabhupada's books. You know, language will change over time after 1,000 years, 2,000 years, and then there'll be purports to Srila Prabhupada's purports. You know, change is inevitable. You know, it will happen, but the point is to stay true to the principles that are in the Bhagavatam. Language will change, culture will change. You know, even in the past 50, 60 years, you know, some of you, you know, have Prabhupada disciples, and you've seen society change so much. And so the movement will change, and the ways we preach will change, and so forth. But the truth, the absolute truth of the Bhagavatam, will always be in the core. But yeah, that's the glory. That's why ISKCON has been so successful. That's why Prabhupada was so successful, unlike any other major group that came out of India. Why do Americans take up Krishna consciousness? Why do Westerners take up Krishna consciousness? Because Prabhupada and his disciples and his followers were able to package the absolute truth in a form that's relevant. That's why it spreads. It has to be relevant, right? So yeah, there's both sides to it. The truth should be always there. The principle should stay intact, but also it should be presented in a way. There should be innovation. Innovation was constant in the Gaudiya Vaishnavism. I would say that. So generation after generation. All right. Any thoughts or comments before we go ahead and end the class? Yes, Prue, did you have any comments? Yeah, I got excited about that last point.
Well, I was in a position to be able to witness innovation back in the early 80s, mid 80s, early 90s. in New Vrindavan. And, you know, I think those that were not a part of that, to hear Kirtanananda Maharaj speak why he, you know, was making these changes, mm-hmm. really jumped to a lot of conclusions, right? But if you were there and he had us go through all of Srila Prabhupada's purports and writings, talking about how you never change the philosophy, but externals definitely can shift or change for preaching purposes only, right? Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with just saying, hey, which is what he did, let's just try this, right? So, you know, some of you may be aware of some of the changes that went on there, but one was the dress, right? So he bought bolts of saffron material, and then he made, we had our seamstresses there, and they made these robes. And they kind of look like, maybe like a Franciscan monk,
yeah.
you know, because it was a straight robe with a belt with a hood. And, but I can tell you, I wore those robes, and I wore them just like I wear my sari to town or whatever. I would wear the robes to town or on the streets. And I had many more people stop me.
Hmm.
Of course, you know, they thought I was coming from, you know, this Christian background,
yeah.
right? Like one mailman stopped me once, and he just asked me all these questions about God. And we had a beautiful conversation right there on the street in South Philly. And then he said, oh, are you coming out of that church over there? And I said, no. And I said, he said, oh, well, what church are you affiliated with? And I said, well, have you heard of the Hare Krishnas? Body language, his whole body just went, hey, we just had a beautiful conversation,
mm-hmm.
you know? And but it's like that, appearances or whatever it might be in the minds of these, you know, people who are so far removed from the lotus feet of God, you know, that somehow, you know, so that was one aspect,
mm-hmm.
right? The other aspect was, okay, we changed, we converted the hymns into English, right? So that when Westerners, when we had many, many Westerners would come into Radhavindavan Chandra's temple, they could relate, they could at least understand with their material ears that they, okay, oh, they're praising God. Oh, okay, they, you know, they're saying these words, and those words, you know, relate to glorification of God, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the mold shop made chairs, so we brought in chairs, you know, instead of sitting on the floor, because we had busloads of Westerners that would come in. But so men sat on one side and women sat on the other side, side by side, in front of the baby. But you know, so there was just, all right, the other one was Jesus, right?
The other what?
We had a Murti of Jesus.
Oh, interesting.
Made. Yeah. I think that's probably what tipped the. But, you know, and you know, Bhaktivedanta Kirtanananda was GVC. It's not to say he consulted everything he did with other GVC members, and I think that's where the backlash came. But, you know, we had Prabhupada in the center, and Bhaktivedanta sat to, Kirtanananda Maharaj sat to one side, and Jesus was on the other side.
Hmm.
And that's when we started doing interfaith. When we were doing interfaith prior, and then Jesus came as a result of that, sitting with a blessed hand up. And we even had these Christians come and move to New Vrindavan just to offer arti and garlands to Jesus every day, right?
Hmm.
But it was something that Westerners could relate to when they walked into the temple. Couldn't relate to Jagannath, couldn't relate to, but, oh, wait, there's Jesus.
Hmm.
Okay, so something, there must be something here for me to learn or to, you know, to ask questions about or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was all for preaching purposes.
Mm-hmm.
But being innovative got him excommunicated.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah. What can I say? That won't get me in trouble now. But, but yeah. Did you have any comments, Ragatmika Mataji? But yeah, innovation is always needed, one shape or other. Yeah. Innovation along with cooperation, yeah. Yeah, times were rough for ISKCON back then. It was like the Wild West out there. Yeah.
Bhaktatirtha was, under his guidance, and he went on to do wonderful things in interfaith preaching, right? And, of course, there was the women, too, where he gave them that opportunity to become preachers because he saw sannyasis were falling down because of so many women, energy going to them, approaching them, And he said, we're not the body. The philosophy is there for everyone. And so he gave that opportunity, right, for women to step up and to also be there for the other women in ISKCON.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there's so many things that can be done for innovation, right? And he was trying something. And, yeah, I was thinking of Bhaktatirtha Maharaj also. Yeah, the way he would preach, the way he would talk, the way he would dress sometimes. He was trying really hard to connect. I remember some of his disciples at the institute, Madhvacharya Prabhu, I think maybe he was mentioning, that when they would go hear from Bhaktatirtha Maharaj, even though Maharaj was having them chant Hare Krishna, somehow they just kind of didn't have a clue that this was the Hare Krishna religion that they had seen on the streets or something, because Maharaj was doing it so innovatively and with all his heart. And that was the beauty of all these acharyas, that, they're innovating, but their heart was still at Prabhupada's feet.
Course.
That's what really does it.
And I think the thing is that's very hard for ISKCON to get away from is it's not Hinduism, and we can't seem to instill that in Westerners. With the way things are right now, for some reason we can't get them to understand Vaishnavism or, the Vedas or, that it goes beyond being, we're not Hindus.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we're kind of like, seems like we're stuck in that,
Krishna consciousness has come to the West in a certain package, certain cultural packaging, and will more or less stay that way. But at the same time, we can reach out to people in innovative ways and just sharing the truths of the Bhagavatam, and it will touch people's hearts as long as we don't put too many cultural barriers in there, for them to take Krishna consciousness. People do take up Krishna consciousness, if they're just able to focus on what is the main purpose of the Bhagavatam and how you actually practice it.
The interfaith days there were quite dynamic. Mm-hmm. You had imams that would come, and they were always given a platform to introduce their devotion to God. And we were just so thrilled that they had devotion to God.
Yeah.
So it didn't matter if they were calling Allah, or what other names, right? And then we had a beautiful Jewish rabbi that was such a nice association for Kirtanananda Maharaj too, and Rabbi Gilberman. And, and they would always wind up chanting Hare Krishna, because they're in our, environment. So, they would always wind up, appreciating the devotees also, right? Because they were given a voice and it was not sectarian, right?
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Prabhu. San Matazi, did you have a point?
Thank you for the lovely class. I just wanted to, when you were sharing about Vaisheshika Prabhu's calling out, reminded me when I was a teenager, young teenager, I had this fear suddenly from nowhere. Like, I remember standing with my dad in the front of the garage, that what happens when we die? And I've had that when I was little too. And at that moment, our neighbors who were Hare Krishna devotees passed by, and my whole life changed from learning about Krishna consciousness from that point on. So thank you for
sure. Yeah, thank you, Prabhu. Thanks for sharing. All right. It's over time now. If there's no other comments, we'll end the class. Grantvarshima Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki.